I'm sorry.
I think we're good to get started finally. Thank you for your patience, everyone.
All right, thank you all. All right, good morning. Elizabeth Gunn, chair of the Task Force on Power-Based Violence, and pleased to call our meeting to order. We'll begin with the committee roll call. Ms. Leisha Allison. Dr. Kavita Bhadra.
Present.
Ms. Patricia Charlton.
This is Daniel Archer. I'm sitting in for her. It's her designee, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Thank you. Dr. Stephanie Coleman. Dr. Stephanie Coleman.
On Zoom.
Is she back?
Not yet. Oh, it looks like she hasn't signed back onto Zoom.
I'll come back. Mr. Jordan Fischetti.
Here.
Ms. Erin Frock.
Here.
Dr. Tabor Griswold.
Present.
Elizabeth Gunn, present. Ms. Christina Hall.
Here.
Ms. Linda King.
Present.
Mr. Sean Mabanta. Mr. Sean Mabanta. Mr. Jose Melendrez. Dr. Allison Netsky.
Dr. Netsky, you are on mute.
Present.
No, we can't hear you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Allison Netsky. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Noted. Noted. Dr. Netsky present. Ms. Michelle Sposito. And Ms. Lindsay Walterbeek.
Present.
Dr. Stephanie Coleman.
I counted accurate, that's quorum.
Okay, thank you. We have a quorum. Agenda item one is public comment. Public comment will be taken during this agenda item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item until the matter is included on an agenda as an item on which action may be taken. Comments will be limited to 3 minutes per person. Persons making comments will be asked to begin by stating their names for the record and to spell their last names. The task force chair may elect to allow additional public comment on a specific agenda item when the agenda item is being considered. In accordance with the Attorney General File 00047, as restated in the Attorney General's Open Meeting Law Manual, the task force chair may prohibit comment if the content of that comment is of a topic that is not relevant to or within the authority of the Board of Regents, or the content is willfully disruptive of the meeting by being irrelevant, repetitious, slanderous, offensive, inflammatory, irrational, or amounting to personal attacks or interfering with the rights of other speakers. I don't see any public comment in person in Las Vegas. Is there any public comment in person in Reno?
No.
I'm sorry.
No,
I'm okay. Okay, let's come back to Las Vegas. There's public comment in Las Vegas.
Hey y'all, my name is Jordan Fischette, F-I-S-C-H-E-T-T-E, and this public comment is being made as a member of the public. Just wanted to share that in these moments, I'm reminded of the weight victims of power-based violence carry, an overwhelming fear, a sense of being unheard or unseen, and the knowledge that those with power have not always chosen to protect the most vulnerable. As we face a political landscape where individuals with a history of exploiting power for their own gain hold influential positions, I feel an urgent need to speak out and stand with you. I understand the fear, the unsettling, heart-wrenching feeling that your experiences might be dismissed or minimized especially by leaders who seem removed from the reality of what it means to be a survivor. I know the United States having a president-elect who's been credibly convicted as a sexual predator only deepens these fears, making many feel more isolated than ever. Allow me to be clear. I am here to advocate for everyone. You are not alone in this. I am here, I see you, and I promise to do everything I can to hold institutions accountable, to amplify voices, and to push for meaningful change. Thank you.
To join public comment via telephone, dial 1-699-900-9128 and enter meeting ID 940-469-8707. And the passcode is 106363. Is there any public comment via telephone?
No, there is not.
Thank you. That concludes agenda item one. Turning to agenda item two, which is the chair's report. Pleased to give a few updates since our previous meeting. On September 27th, I met with Eric Gilliland, Chief Human Resources Officer at ENGIE, to discuss the overlap between the task force and Title IX. More information is forthcoming later in the meeting. October 16th, I met with Chris Nielsen, Council to the Power-Based Violence Task Force, regarding meeting protocols and committees, since that arose during the last meeting. It was advised that to streamline our processes and the continuity of open meeting law, that we move away from considering committees as and to conduct our work as a complete task force. October 24th, 2024, I met again with Mr. Nielsen and Renee Davis, Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, to plan the agenda. And the Associate Vice Chancellor and I met again on the 28th to finalize items. And on November 5th, just 2 days ago, I received the All Institution Socio-Demographics Report from the director of the Grant Sawyer Center. It is probable that that survey, after review at the NT level, will be distributed to meet to members prior to the next task force for review and discussion. We also have one vacancy, and the vice chancellor in the NT office is currently working with student organizations to fill that, to fill our one vacancy, which is a student position. And that concludes the chair's report. Agenda item three, our approval of the minutes. The minutes were distributed for review. Are there any updates, corrections to the minutes?
No.
Seeing no comment, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Linda King, for the record. I'll move to approve the September 24th, 2024 meeting minutes.
Ms. King, move to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Fischott, did I say it right?
Yeah.
Seconded. All in favor, say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay. The approval of the minutes carries. Agenda item four, a Title IX update. The agenda item reads, ENGIE Chief Human Resources Officer Alec Gilliland will present general remarks on the Title IX regulations that became effective August 1st, 2024. There is some overlap between the work of the task force and Title IX regulations. It was planned that Mr. Gilliland would present some information about the coordination of Title IX at the ENGIE level as a step one in informing the task force of where our work might overlap, and then there would be a subsequent presentation at the February meeting with additional information about how our work again might overlap where there's intersection. Unfortunately, with this important agenda item, unfortunately, Mr. Gilliland is under the weather. So we're going to table agenda item four until our February meeting. So I look forward to returning to that in February, as I know that this is a pressing item for members of the task force. So we wish Mr. Gilliland good health in the interim, and we will move on to agenda item 5. So agenda item 5, scholarship and grant policy provisions for students experiencing power-based violence in compliance with Nevada revised statutes, NRS 369.159, board policy, Title 4, Chapter 8, Section 13 provides interim measures, supportive measures, and remedies for complainants and respondents who are party to a complaint of power-based violence. Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, Renee Davis, will provide an overview of these policy provisions, including available support measures and remedies in the form of scholarship and grant waivers. So with that, Associate Vice Chancellor, I turn agenda item 5 over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Gunn. I'm going to connect here, and so you won't be able to see my face. So I just wanted to say thank you for some time on this agenda to talk about this important topic. Okay, can someone confirm that you can see the slides on Zoom and also in Las Vegas?
We can see them in Las Vegas.
Zoom?
Zoom, yes.
I can see.
Was that a yes? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. I just didn't want to get started and then people say, oh, I haven't seen a thing. So here we go. So as the chair stated, I'm Renee Davis. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. And I am going to talk today about the origins of this statute and two bills, basically, the policy that was passed by the board. And then a few procedural things. And so it really is meant to be a fairly high level overview. However, I'll get into a little nitty gritty. And if you have questions, since we have plenty of time for this meeting, I'm happy to answer them during the presentation or at the end, whatever the pleasure of the chair is. So as I said, we'll go ahead and get started. So Senate Bill 347, many in this body probably are very familiar with the Senate Bill 347 from 2021. It created the task force and it also established many provisions that not only guide the task force, but also the policy for NSHE on sexual misconduct, which as you probably all also know, the language in the statute changed from sexual misconduct to power-based violence. That was when this task force was renamed, and that happened with Assembly Bill 245. Now, in the interim, of course, in 21, right after session, the bulk of the provisions of Senate Bill 247 were taken to the board to be enacted in the handbook in June of 21. However, it wasn't until December 21 that the revisions I'm going to talk about today were approved by the board. So it was a two-step process. The working group that was system-wide at the time took care of all of the other provisions in 347, and then there were some other related ones that weren't related to sexual misconduct also done in June, but then in December, we followed up with these couple of items that I want to talk to you about today. So, excuse me. If you go now today and look at 396.158, you will see the provisions that I'm talking about today. And they're fairly simply stated in the statute, which is essentially a student who experiences power-based violence may request a waiver from certain requirements having to do with grants and scholarships. Now, this particular section in statute, you'll see that it talks about the scholarship grant and other academic programs in the context of something offered by an institution. So that's talking about institutional scholarships and grant programs. And then the other provision is there, it's in that same section. I won't really be talking about subsection two. Really, subsection one is the focus today. Now, that was enacted into the handbook. And so let me say that I did not include a slide. And so you're wondering, okay, wait, this last slide, I'm going to back up. This one is talking about institutional scholarships and grants. How does it apply to the Millennium Scholarship Program? There's actually a provision in 396.934. That's the section of statute that governs continuing eligibility for the Millennium Scholarship Program, and it refers back to this 396.158. So I didn't give you a slide, but basically that's what it does. It refers back. So it ties this one provision to the Millennium Scholarship Program. And that's really the result of this. Or the result of that is this handbook provision here that I'm displaying, which is a party to a matter falling within this section of the handbook. And of note, the language hasn't been updated to say power-based violence, so it still says harassment, sexual harassment. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Can request a waiver. So again, we're talking about a waiver to continuing eligibility requirements. As many of you may know, the Millennium Scholarship has some requirements to keep eligibility. For example, students must maintain a 2.75 semester GPA in any semester they're funded with Millennium Scholarship. They must also complete a minimum number of credits to continue to be eligible. For the universities, that's 12 credits. For the community colleges, that's 9 credits. And so should a student not retain eligibility and they're a party to this matter, then they could request a waiver. Now, the one really important point I think everyone should know is this is the absolute only exception that exists in statute to continuing eligibility requirements. So on our campuses, we have appeals processes for students who maybe fell ill, had some sort of emergency during the semester. For the Millennium Scholarship, then until this provision passed, there were no exceptions. So this is the single exception to not meeting continuing eligibility requirements within the Millennium Scholarship Program. And so what I wanted to show you from there was the language here. And so this is the general. So the one that I just showed you was for Millennium specifically. And then there's another section of the handbook, same chapter, different section, that applies to the institutional. And so it's here as well. So basically though, what you see is all of these are going to refer back to the policy on sexual harassment or misconduct. And so this is where Handbook Title 4, Chapter 8, and please note Section 14. So the reference in doing my updating my research for this presentation, I noticed that there's an update that needs to be made in the handbook because the Millennium chapter and the scholarship chapter sections both refer to Section 13 of B&D, not 14. So we'll have to get that updated. But at any rate, this is the section that you all probably know fairly well. There are sections within the handbook, and there's basically harassment under Title 9 or not under Title 9. And so there are two sections. So that's why these provisions appear in two spots. And there are basically two statements that are possible supportive measures and remedies for students. And one is a way to request a waiver of the requirements pursuant to Title IV, Chapter 18, Section 3, and that is against the institutional scholarships and grants, and then specifically for the Governor Gwynn. And so these provisions are listed under the process that is in existence for all other things. So there's no separate appeal at the system level that is done or at the state level with the treasurer's office. It all goes through the campus process, which makes a lot of sense in my mind because we don't want students to have to go through multiple processes should they need to request supportive measures and remedies. And so that's basically where we're at. And I think that the knowledge that this option is out there may not be very well known. And so in reflecting on the committee's work and an inquiry that we received over the summer, we realized that these provisions need more visibility and there needs to be transparency for students in terms of how do you undertake such a request. And so I put this slide together of general guidelines, and it really is very general. Students who wish to request a waiver, and they may need other types of remedies as well, which again, there's quite a lengthy list of possibilities within the policy. They would need to go through the institutional process. Now, that complaint process I know is governed in many cases by a Title IX office or coordinator, but they all vary a little bit based on the size of the campus. You know, the universities have a larger office devoted to this work. At one of our smallest institutions, it might be a person who wears many hats, but there is an existing process that students can avail themselves of. So, and then here's that bullet that I've already mentioned earlier, that the power-based violence, sexual harassment, it's really the only basis to request a waiver to the continuing eligibility requirements. And then in terms of the high level kind of notification, again, we recognize that student privacy needs to be protected. So, and these are not, so far they have not been, there have not been that many of them. So basically the campus would notify the Title IX office or the appropriate authority would notify our office. And we would just make sure the treasurer's office updates the eligibility record for that student. And they're gonna update at the treasurer's office. The financial aid office will get an updated record, but there's no need really for anyone else to be involved because the treasurer's office is the one who would update the eligibility. It doesn't have to, the financial aid office in this case is not the middleman. Now, on the other hand, if we're talking about institutional grants and scholarships, of course, there will be some interaction that needs to happen there. But as far as Millennium goes, the keeper of the eligibility status is the treasurer's office. And so my office would just work as a conduit to make sure the record is updated appropriately. And finally, I just want to talk a little bit about, again, the realization that we need to have a transparent process for students. So the plan right now is to develop a web page that will detail the steps the student needs to take. Again, it's going to be a pretty simple list of steps, not simply done, but simple to state. And before doing that, though, I really want to talk with the system-wide Title IX group, get on their agenda and talk with them and make sure that whatever we put there makes sense, and also to have the appropriate contacts in one place for students. So they will be able to have information on who to reach out to, regardless of what institution they're attending. And then also as well as getting the advice from the Title IX coordinators group, then of course this will help in terms of knowledge about this process as an available remedy or supportive measure. So with that, I'm going to end, and I'll go ahead and unplug. And I'm happy to take any questions you may have. Sorry, just squishing here.
Hi, Renee. It's Stephanie. I just want clarification that the student can submit the waiver while they're going through the complaint process. So we're not waiting for it to be resolved. Once the complaint has been submitted to Title IX or the institution's complaint process, the student can also, in tandem, ask for this pause or this waiver of their millennial.
Well, I would say yes, but the student, I mean, so it's one of the possible supportive remedies and measures. So the student, it doesn't even necessarily need to request this specifically. I would hope that once the Title IX coordinators are more aware of this as a possibility, then it'll be something that they'll consider as they're working with the student on the remedies or supportive measures. So would be like, okay, what's the situation? Are you a Millennium student? Okay, do we need to request this? I mean, maybe they retained eligibility and it's not even an issue. But if there's a situation where the student is not making the required progress in that program, then that should be offered up as a possibility. And yes, through my understanding, I'm not an expert in the these specific regulations, but my understanding is that it can happen during that, because again, it applies to complainants and respondents. So it's part of that review process that the Title IX officer does. Does that sound right? Does that sound right, Linda?
Yeah, Linda King, for the record, it does. And I just sent you an email, Renee. I'll get you coordinated with the Title IX coordinators group. I think it's a fantastic idea to have the discussion with them.
Thank you very much.
I have a question. Having worked on several appeals committees with students, it seems like there's always that the student always has to show documentation, all this other paperwork to back up what they're saying. Is that also part of the requirement for this waiver to be accepted?
No. So it's, thank you for that question. I think it's an important one. This is part of the determination that's made through the Title IX process. And so it's not the same as a student doing like an appeal for an 100% refund exception or an appeal for some other thing on the campus. This is really meant to be, because of the way that policy is written, it's self-contained within the Title IX complaint process. So whatever you would do normally in your complaint process, then you would do that. And I mean, my understanding is that, the usual, we pass on documentation and stuff, but not for this process. This is its own kind of self-contained, and the determination of the remedies or supportive measures come from the campus. And so it's, I don't think there's any need to justify. I mean, you do whatever documentation you do within your process, but it's not anything that's going to go and be shared with my office or with the treasurer's office. It's just, this student has been granted a waiver for this period of time or this semester, and then we go with it.
Can I have a follow-up question as regard to the Millennium? Because if the waiver is for maybe this semester that maybe the incident happens, but it ends up impacting future GPA, so will the waiver then be extended to all future GPA requirements for the Millennium?
Well, I wouldn't say all future. I would say that your offices, whoever the entity on your campus that makes the decision is going to say it's for this period. And then I would say also it could be revised, because it's, there could be situations where, okay, we think this is enough time, but more time is needed. So I think
if you totally fail that semester and then your overall GPA is kind of tanked, sometimes it takes a really long time to build that GPA back up.
Millennium is a semester GPA. So cumulative GPA is not a factor, but
okay.
But yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Michelle Sposito. I am a Title IX coordinator at UNLV. So I just wanted to clarify that students can access this when they come to my office, even without going down a formal complaint process. So we would provide supportive measures to the students, even without going down a formal complaint process. And this particular, the submitting a request for the waiver of the Millennium Scholarship is listed as one of our supportive measures in Title IV, Chapter 8, Section 14. So it's a really great resource for students. And we've been using it on our campus for a little while.
You've used it for Millennium on your campus?
Yes.
Okay, how's that information been communicated to the treasurer's office, do you know?
Ooh, I do not know. I worked in conjunction with our like financial aid resource, so I would assume that they did it. I'd have to go back because it's been a while since we had one of those come up, but I'm happy to let you know how that process happened.
Or I can reach out to that. I have contacts in the financial aid office. I'll reach out to them because I just want to make sure that things are, you know, students are availing themselves of the option, you know, and that it's, you know, all the ducks are in a row on the treasurer's side.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And yes, I mean, I'm not going to, in terms of the remedies and supportive measures, it's one on the list and it's treated the same way as the, you know, because it is on that list.
This is Jordan Bichette. I just have a clarifying question. For the Millennium Scholarship, there's a 6-year window, right, from completion of high school. Does this in any way, does this waiver extend that window in any way, right? So like if I have this semester waived, but my next one would be outside that window, am I then ineligible to essentially get it for the next semester?
I will do some research. That's an excellent question. I do not think that it would allow an extension of the time period because there is very specific, there are very specific requirements in statute for, you know, limited options for extension, which are right now the military service and basically volunteer service / mission / that kind of thing. And so I would double check, but I would, if I had to guess, I'd say no, but I will research it because we want to make sure that's well understood. Thank you for that question.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Elizabeth Gunn for the record. Any other questions or feedback for the Vice Chancellor? Thank you so much for your time and the presentation materials today and the conversation and for ensuring that our students are connected to this resource through the Title IX coordinators. So much appreciated.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Moving on to agenda item 6, task force research assignments. This is agenda item to lead members in a discussion of the statute guiding the makeup and duties of our task force, as well as the requirements for administration of a survey of power-based violence. I plan to request that you all may be amenable to volunteering to take on a couple of research assignments to present at a future meeting on one section of the statute, including a summary of provisions, work that has already been completed by the task force to date, and potential recommendations for future task force conversation. So the spirit behind this agenda item is we have come to some important conversations and inflection points in our last few meetings about the direction of the task force. And I think one of our goals is to, our primary goal is to stay grounded in the legislation that guides our work, and it's prescriptive. We're also a recommending entity. We recommend items to the Board of Regents for their consideration and possible action. in order to consider the four main areas that we have been in conversation about, which is the survey, training, awareness, advocacy, well, that might be back for us as a group to take a step back from a broader perspective and understand in a more nuanced way the legislation and what's guiding our work. In the first year or so, we were primarily concerned with creating the task force, onboarding membership, and the survey. I think it might be time to take a look at a more nuanced look at the legislation and take on that joint responsibility of informing each other about different components. I have some ideas for that, but I'll pause there to ask if there's any questions, comments about going in this direction.
Linda King, for the record, I'm happy to take on a topic at chair's discretion, but it might make sense for me to do the piece on surveys.
Okay. I don't hear any complaints. So thank you for that. So moving into the legislation, of course, it's statute 369, and there are multiple subsections. I'll kind of read through them. I had sort of hoping that there would be no objections. I sort of pre-assigned, but based on Ms. King's comment, we can negotiate who will present kind of in what area today. Going through our list of members as they're presented in our roll call, I did not assign anything to the chancellor. Ms. King, I had previously thought asking if you would take on work that related to grievances, no contact orders, but we'll reassess that.
But I'm happy to do whatever works for it. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
That's fine.
Okay. I thought I might assign myself some work, the section that gives the scope and purpose of the task force. Ms. Frock, I had assigned to you, or thought of asking you, I should say, and Ms. Posito to take on the climate survey. Again, we can flip that. This is all for conversation and discussion. And I would give you the exact sections of the statute that correlate. Mr. Melendez, he's not here, but given his position, I thought the policy section would be relevant for Mr. Melendez. Dr. Griswold, as vice chair, membership protocol meeting statute sections around the meeting. Dr. Batra, our annual reporting.
There's a
subsection about how we report. Dr. Netsky, there's another section on reporting, and I could confirm the difference between those two. Ms. Hall and Mr. Mabanta, who's not with us today, given your community-facing positions, I thought about asking if you'd be willing to take on the section that relates to the task force thinking about partnerships with external agencies or organizations. So this is a section that speaks about memoranda of understanding, MOUs.
Sure, no problem.
And I thought you all might collaborate on that given the relationship between your respective professional positions. Thank you. Ms. Walderbeek, there's a set of definitions at the beginning of NRS 396, but I might ask if you'd be willing to give us an overview of the definitions. Okay, moving on. Mr. Fichette, there's a section about required training. Again, that seems well aligned with your area of expertise in your position at UNLV. And Dr. Coleman, there's a section on programs programming on awareness. Given your position as Vice President of Student Affairs, I thought this might be relevant to your professional expertise. Heard Dr. Coleman thinking about it.
No. Oh, I thought you heard me. I'm sorry. No, that's great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. So it sounds like I can reach out to our student representatives and ask them if they would be willing to take on some of the, just presenting us with some of the definitions that we're working under specific definitions when we refer to terms like sexual misconduct and power-based violence and so on. Ms. King, I'm happy to shift the sections.
No, it's not a problem. Not okay.
Any other conversation about the distribution of sections and kind of the overview of what each person will be doing?
You'll just be in touch.
This is your chair, Chris Neal, or Council Chair, Council Chris Nielsen. In the agenda, you identify that these assignments will be presented at a future meeting. Is there a general timeline that you have in mind?
Well, the next meeting would be in February, I believe. So are you, I'll need to formalize the presentation, the distribution of the topics at that meeting.
Okay, thank you.
So I guess I'll formalize that meeting materials for the February 6th meeting and also prepare a template for the presentation with time limits on each person's slide so that there's consistency in the way that we're delivering that message to each other. And my hope is that this will help us better understand the different components of the legislation and what we want to prioritize moving forward. So thank you all for being amenable to that conversation. Mr. Nielsen, is it this is Elizabeth Gunn for the record. Mr. Nielsen, is it appropriate to distribute these sections and slides via email to members in the interim to prepare for the February meeting?
Yeah, I think that's permissible, Chair. I mean, I think that was the whole point of today's agenda item is provide that information and get the conversation started. So I have no issues with that approach.
Okay, thank you. So I'll be in touch via email then with members with the specific numerical sections of the legislation and a request for formulating the presentation with a template. I'll give an example. I'll set mine up to begin with by way of an example for everyone. And thank you all so much for being amenable to do this. I think it will help direct our conversation in a productive way. So that concludes agenda item 6. Moving on to agenda item 7. This is new business. Items for consideration at future meetings may be suggested. Any discussion of an item under new business is limited to description and clarification of the subject matter of the item, which may include reasons for the request, and no substantive discussion may occur at the meeting on new business items in accordance with Nevada open meeting law. So with that, any conversation about new business?
Jordan Bishop, for the record, I'm honestly not sure if this is new business, but would it be appropriate now to request time on future agenda about increasing the meeting frequency of this task force?
Yes, Elizabeth Gunn, for the record, thank you. I think that's an appropriate request for this agenda item.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any other recommendations or conversation about new business? Okay. Well, thank you. Then moving again to public comment. Public comment will be taken during this agenda item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item until the matter is included on agenda as an item on which action may be taken. Comments will be limited to 3 minutes per person. Persons making comment will be asked to begin by stating their name for the record and spell their last name. The task force chair may elect to allow additional public comment on a specific agenda item when that agenda item is being considered. In accordance with Attorney General File 00047, as restated in the Attorney General's Open Meeting Law Manual, the task force chair may prohibit comment if the content of that comment is a topic that is not relevant to or within the authority of the Board of Regents, or if the content is willfully disruptive of the meeting by being irrelevant, repetitious, slanderous, offensive, inflammatory, irrational, or amounting to personal attacks or interfering with the rights of other speakers. I don't see any public comment in Las Vegas. Is there any public comment in person in Reno?
There's no public comment in Reno.
And to join via telephone, dial 1-699-900-9128 and enter meeting ID 940-4697-8707 and passcode 106363. Are there any public comments via telephone?
There are no public comments via telephone.
Thank you. With that, we'll conclude the meeting. Thank you all for your time and attention today. And thank you, as always, to our colleagues at the NG offices for their assistance in facilitating the meeting space and technology. We appreciate it. And our meeting is adjourned at 10:01. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.